Again, thanks for all the birthday wishes. Appreciate them, all of you. Up next, Rosemary Ellen Guiley. As we continue, we'll talk about some of her work in the Dream State on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, and of course, welcome our dear friend, Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Rosemary, welcome.
So say happy birthday, too.
You know, it's been how many years now since you and I have been on the air together? 17, I think. We started in 97 back there.
97, and our very first show was on dreams.
My gosh, and you've got a dream book coming out about the afterlife, right? Coming out in September?
Oh, actually, it's out, and it's called Dream Messages from the Afterlife.
Good, you got it out early. Good for you.
I talk about dream visits from the dead that occurred during the dream state. And I've been doing a lot of research in spirit communications, you know, continuing the work that we talked about in talking to the dead, and trying a variety of avenues for having contact with people who've passed on. And dreams are really one of our most powerful mediums for that kind of contact, real contact, where people get an actual visitation with a message. Sometimes they have physical contact. And it's very reassuring when people are still going through a lot of grief.
How do people interpret their dreams, Rosemary, when they don't have the luxury, of course, of going to you, for example?
It's very easy to start to understand your dreams, even when they seem like nonsense. You know, they don't have a beginning, middle, and an end, and there's often strange imagery. Everything in the dream has a meaning, and our dream visitations are more like real experiences where we often feel like we're awake within a dream state. But the dead can also be symbols in our dreams. They can appear as authority figures, as reminding us of something in the past, even aspects of ourselves. So if we look at dreams as telling us about ourselves, everything in a dream then has a meaning that can be applied back to us. Dreams are highly emotional. They are a barometer for how we feel, how we're doing in life, things that aren't resolved, things that we worry about. And even when we're at crossroads in life and we need direction, dreams are very good with helping us see clearly what we need to do. So the process of association is a good way to start. You look at every piece in a dream as having a message for you, even inanimate objects, and you look at puns, plays on words, what your own personal associations and meanings are with the symbols in the dream, and the dream then starts to speak in a whole different language that's very intuitive and very profound.
Rosemary, how did you get involved in dream interpretation? How'd that happen for you?
My mother had a lot of precognitive dreams, and she had other kinds of psychic experiences too. I did as a kid. I think everybody has some sort of psychic or paranormal experiences when they're young. My mother had these unusual dreams, and when I was an adolescent, she shared a lot of them with me, and the idea that you could dream the future, a future that would come true, was riveting to me. It fascinated me, and I wanted to understand more about dreams. So by the time I was in high school, I was doing a lot of dream experimentation on my own. I was learning how to do out-of-body travel in dreams, send and receive messages, look into the future. I never had the level and frequency of precognitive dreams that my mother did, because my own ability took different directions. But I had enough success in all of those areas to convince me that our dreams are an amazing link to other realities and to even to our own future.
You know, a lot of people who have been dreaming recently, Rosemary, are having very strange dreams of things happening. I think there could be some kind of catastrophe afoot here. Are you hearing this too?
I do get rumbles about dreams and people having unsettling dreams, fearing that something bad is going to happen. It's not unusual for people to preview major events, including catastrophes, in their dreams. They'll get pieces of it. And in fact, I still get emails from people who dreamed about 9/11 before it happened. They didn't dream the disaster that we all saw unfold on television, but they had dreams about tall buildings crashing, people falling out of buildings, waste laid to a city, planes crashing into buildings. And so it could very well be that people are getting inklings of something. The problem is that collectively we seem to get different pieces of future events that are shaping up, but it's very unusual to get an entire event, at least in time to prevent something on a large scale. It seems that the forces that are in motion reach a sort of a critical mass factor by the time people start tuning in.
One of your other works, of course, is called The Encyclopedia of Demons and Demonology. And a lot of people, Rosemary, seem to be wrestling between good and evil. These demons that are out there, and by the way, we did a poll on the Ouija board, and more than 50% of the Coast to Coast listeners who participated in that poll want me to come back and do another Ouija board show. But these demons that are out there, they're not disembodied spirits, are they? That's, there's something else?
Well, they take different forms, and there are a range of malevolent entities that participate in the dealings that we have in life. Some are just kind of tricky and mischievous, and some are hostile, and some are quite evil and very powerful. They can take various forms. They can be disembodied entities. They can masquerade. Sometimes they will even masquerade as ghosts of the dead. They can shapeshift and sometimes appear in solid form to people, in human-like forms, or even kind of mixed forms, like monstrous sorts of beings. So it depends on what kind of experiences people are having. But this is something that I'm also seeing on the increase, that more people are reporting paranormal kinds of experiences. And the more people open up, the more we're going to encounter a range of things, from the good to the bad and the ugly. Any sort of wrestling that people are doing with their conscience, with ethics, morals, decisions, even chaos in their lives, these can often provide opportunities for opportunistic spirits to come in and start influencing and manipulating things.
The demons themselves, when they appear, are they summoned? They show up on their own? What gets them here?
They can be summoned, and some people will summon beings deliberately. They engage in spell casting, and they want spirits to help them accomplish something or get something. People can summon them inadvertently, too, and this is where something like the Ouija board comes in,
yeah.
That when people sort of play around with devices that open the door to the spirit world, they can invite in presences unwittingly. It's like putting out a call to the other dimension, saying, hello, hello, is anybody there? Would you like to come and talk to me? And there are many ways to do this responsibly and without problem. You know, I engage in a lot of kind of spirit communication activities myself. But a lot of times people don't have much of a background in this sort of thing, or they're looking for a thrill. They kind of want to be shook up and excited. And sometimes entities can come in and latch onto people and to environments, and they might stick around and cause a lot of problems.
The other works you've done, of course, vampires, werewolves, you've done work on ghosts and spirits, angels, of course. We always talk to you around the Christmas season for that as well. I think people need a miracle these days, Rosemary.
Many people do, and people are looking for some way to turn their lives around. So many of us feel that we are being pummeled by forces beyond our control, economically, politically, things that transpire socially. People are still having financial problems from all the economic chaos that started several years ago in this country, and people are feeling that around the world too. So it's natural to reach out to the realm of spirit, to the divine, to seek help. And people are finding themselves in need of big help, not just small things, but very large things. So I'm certainly seeing a lot of that in the work that I do and the communication I have with people. Are there ways that they can turn the forces of the universe in their favor? And there are many things that we can do to try and redirect things in a more favorable way.
I mean, look, life is tough. It's not easy, and we have ups and downs, but I have found that people who are generally more positive seem to pull themselves out of this mess more than the people who are not.
Many people have, kind of tapes that play in the background with negative expectations, and we can get those programmed into us very early in life. Things never work out for me. Something bad's always going to happen.
Black cloud always over their heads, right?
And it sort of operates in the background unconsciously with a lot of people. Then others have an expectation, even when they have ups and downs and setbacks, they still have an expectation that things are going to turn around and be okay for them. And those are the people who are able to better harness the forces of the universe. The forces of the universe are always in motion, and we can align ourselves with those forces. The universe operates in a direction toward harmony, balance, good, healing, and wholeness. And we do have the dark underbelly of the chaos. It's a polarity. It's a push and a pull. But we can do a lot of things to put ourselves on the upside of that so that we're better able to get past the rough spots and also to manifest some of the good things that we want to bring into our lives.
Back to the dreams for a moment. What percent of the people who dream are dreaming, if we even know this, intuitive dreams as opposed to just dreams that don't mean anything?
Well, dreams always do mean something.
They do.
But, I also believe that we have what I call little precognitions all the time. And dreams are highly intuitive. They're always kind of sweeping the landscape, the time and space landscape, so that we can look ahead. And when people don't pay attention to their dreams, then they don't recognize a lot of the information that we get. It often takes something dramatic to dream of something dramatic, and then the real event happens and say, oh my gosh, I dreamed of that, or I dreamed of part of that. If we pay attention to our dreams on a regular basis, we're going to get constant guidance that will help us look ahead better. So we get that on an ongoing level, and we can do our shifting and adjusting accordingly. I think everybody has those kinds of dreams.
Yeah, they just don't. Now, why don't people remember their dreams? Some people.
Some people just naturally don't. And we all know prolific dreamers who remember long dreams every night or many dreams every night. And then it's not unusual to talk to someone who says, I must not dream because I don't remember my dreams. Sometimes it's a case of just paying more attention and jogging the mechanism so that you do start to remember. And for people who really don't remember much of their dreams, all that processing still comes out in other ways. We get the feedback through daily intuition and waking consciousness, through synchronicity, and other ways that clue us in to what's shaping up in our future. But we can do a lot to encourage recalling more of our dreams by going through some certain self-programming steps at night before we go to sleep, telling ourselves, giving ourselves instructions to remember our dreams. to putting more effort into it the next day. It's sort of like getting a pickle out of the jar sometimes. And once you get some success, you know, then you're on your way.
You know, there are a lot of people who just don't believe in the spirit world, ghosts. They just don't believe it. How do you convince them, or do you?
I don't consider it my job to convince people who don't believe, because everybody is on their own path of truth. And I also believe that you do look for natural explanations first before you consider the supernatural or paranormal. That's really a good perspective to be in. But sometimes it takes a really dramatic personal experience to convince people that the spirit world exists. And no amount of information or arguments or evidence in support of the paranormal is not going to convince some skeptics. It's going to take that real experience. So what I've really done in my work is I've looked for the how and the why behind things happen. People have experiences. They've been actually quite consistent throughout the ages. And so when people do have experiences that they can't understand, I want to be able to provide some insight, mm-hmm. interpretation, and information that's going to help them incorporate that into their worldview. And that really expands consciousness. It makes us more aware. It adds to our wholeness. It enriches the life journey, even when experiences upset our worldview.
Don't you think that there is probably a science behind, let's say, investigating ghosts, that it's real, it happens, it's been going on in the universe since the beginning of time, that if science tackled it, they'd understand it better?
You know, science does try to, some scientists, that is, a lot of scientists don't want anything to do with this area, but the people, the parapsychologists, the paranormal investigators, who have attempted to apply scientific principle to the paranormal have had some success, but it's still a very elusive aspect of our reality. Our experiences are highly subjective. Even when there are multiple witnesses to the same event, we don't always see things quite the same way. People will have an experience in the presence of someone else that the other person doesn't have. So this makes it very hard for science to find a baseline. How do you evaluate these kinds of experiences? They're very hard to replicate on demand, with the exception of certain kinds of psi tests, so that you can even establish information for the protocols of scientific evaluation. And that's what makes these fields just off limits for a lot of scientists. But nonetheless, people have these experiences, and they are very real. They often shape the direction of a person's life, their beliefs, and they're, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, they're very consistent throughout time. We've had consistent patterns of experiences that are very good evidence that we have regular encounters with otherworldly realities and beings who are from those realities.
Well, it's exciting research, and you've been covering a lot of it, Rosemary. Good for you. And for people who want to contact you, you still use visionaryliving.com?
Visionaryliving.com is my main website. And some big things in spirit communications coming up. There's a very important conference in Scottsdale next month called New Developments in Afterlife Communication. And I will
exciting.
Be there. I'll be talking about dreams. I'll be talking about contacting the dead and spirits in black mirrors. That's another area that I've been doing a lot of research. So visionaryliving.com for all that information.
You got it. Let's talk more about those on another show with you, Rosemary, when we come back, the greatest storyteller ever made. And, of course, we continue with our birthday bash, and one of our great friends, of course, with us, Uri Geller, joining us. Uri, welcome.
Hey, George. First of all, happy birthday. A big hug, a big kiss all the way from sunny England, believe it or not. The sun is shining here. So I'm trying to transmit to you the warmth of the sun rays into your mind, soul, and heart. And I really wish you fantastic another 30 years into your life.
Thank you, Uri. And how is our world's greatest mentalist doing? What have you been up to?
I'm okay. You know, I'm still traveling around the world with my television, successful TV series called The Next Story Geller.
Excellent.
And, of course, you know, the BBC film on which I was interviewed about on your show, called The Secret Life of Uri Geller, is causing a lot of controversy because of the revelations, you know, coming out from the CIA and the remote viewing programs and so on.
That's right.
And, yeah, so really it's morning. What time is it for you there?
Oh, here, I'm in St. Louis this time, not Los Angeles. It's 3:36 in the morning here.
Okay, what I'm going to do, I'm going to Facebook happy birthday to you in a moment, okay?
You got it, my friend. All right,
I love you very much.
Let's keep in touch, Uri.
And you're a great guy. Bye-bye.
All right, Uri Geller. You know, I remember him when he was on the Johnny Carson show. He tried to bend the spoons, and he got so nervous he couldn't do it. And, of course, he's our science advisor, head of the EnterpriseMission.com. What would a birthday be without Richard C. Hoagland? Hey, Richard.
Another orbit of the sun, eh, George?
Oh, my gosh. I stopped counting them a long time ago.
Yeah, I try to do that, but it you know, astronomical stuff kind of gets out there, so.
I hear you knocked him dead at the Earth Keepers Conference in Scottsdale.
You know, it's weird. We missed by, I don't know, microns or whatever. Someone said, you know, George is outside. He stayed around to see what you were doing. And I looked, you know, but I was about to go on stage, and we never connected. But
yeah,
you know, people were talking.
I looked in, and somebody was on. Apparently, he hadn't gotten off yet,
exactly,
whoever was before you. And I got messed up there. But we shall do it again, my friend. Many, many, many mountains to climb, Richard.
Well, happy birthday, George. And there's someone else here who wants to say hi.
I wonder who that would be.
Hey, George. Happy birthday.
Thanks, Robin.
Best wishes to you.
Dr. Robin Falcove with us. Great. And how are things doing in the supplemental world?
Oh, in the supplemental world, we've got lots of battles. I try to address this every morning on my news show. Event horizons, there's just, it's overwhelming. These attacks are ramping up, and we just have to get people informed. That's the biggie. People just don't know what's going on. So.
And Robin, if people want to hear you, what time and again, how do they find you?
Oh, sure. Event Horizons is on Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time. It's an online network, Revolution Radio. They go to freedomslips.com.
Super.
And tomorrow morning we have a change of pace with Brian Forster for his latest trip to Egypt. He's going to share what he found there.
Wonderful. Okay, you two take care. Talk to you soon.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, George.
Thanks, you two. Appreciate it. And, of course, an expert on Mars fossils, Sir Charles Schultz with us. Hey, Sir Charles, always a pleasure.
Well, thank you, George. And, you know, the happiest of birthdays. It's a real pleasure to speak with you again. And I hope that this past year has been a really entertaining and interesting one, and
yeah,
I hope that the next one will be as well.
You know, the way I look at it now, Charles, waking up in the morning is a great adventure.
Well, you know, for some people it's as simple as being able to get up and see the sunrise. For others, wondering what they're going to step on when they do get out of bed.
Yeah, exactly. Anything new in Mars fossils these days?
You know, I've been so embroiled in a new project that I'm going to share with you soon, I couldn't say, but something that really struck my interest and something that may strike yours. Within a couple of years, they've got a company called Ostendo Technologies that's making handheld holographic projectors. That could be something that would be a lot of fun to have for your next, 2 years from now.
I love that.
And they're just amazing. We'll see how that turns out. So looking forward to a nice gift like that, perhaps, would keep you interested for the next couple of years.
Super. All right, Charles, thanks for joining us on the Birthday Bash.
Certainly. Have fun, George.
You got it. And up next, the greatest storyteller ever born, Lionel Fanthorpe. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. So we're going to wrap up the Birthday Bash by going live to the United Kingdom to hear the greatest storyteller ever born. Wait till you hear this half hour. Lionel Fenthorpe. Hello there, my friend.
Hello, George. And first of all, a very happy birthday and many happy returns. Let's hope we're going to do this again in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years.
I hope so, too.
I love being on your show. And my latest storytelling achievement has been, I still couldn't believe it, because while we're on the subject of birthdays, my next birthday is the big 8-0. And I just entered a short story competition and found to my surprise and delight that I'm one of the 10 finalists.
You probably will win, my friend. You're the best. Oh.
Well, I'd love to, but I'm just thinking to myself, wow, if I can still do that in my 80th year against that kind of opposition, life has got a lot more to offer yet. We aren't done yet.
I love it. I'm going to challenge you here.
Yeah.
For my birthday present, tell us the spookiest story you've ever heard.
Wow. Well, I would say that of all the real-life mysteries I've investigated over the last 50 or 60 years, the most mysterious, the strangest of all, one I haven't yet solved, but when I get some more time, I'm going down there to Dartmoor, which is way down in the southwest of England, not far from a place called Princeton. The story is the one of the hairy hands. It goes back to round about 1920, just after the First World War, and a medical officer who was working at the big prison at Dartmoor, he was a motorcyclist, and he was riding back through this area when what he described as the hairy hands seemed to grip the handlebars of his bike. They just came out of nowhere. They gripped the handlebars of his bike and pulled him off the road. Now, over the nearly a century, some more than a century that's passed since then, there has been one report after another. One occasion, it was a bus driver, big, strong guy driving this coach on that same stretch of road, and these hands appeared on the wheel and were wrestling with him. Fortunately, he was strong, but he felt as if he was in some kind of, arm wrestling contest with these things. And he managed to keep the coach on the road and stopped it so that there wasn't an accident. But he said it could have killed everybody on board. On another occasion, and perhaps the strangest and weirdest of all the appearances of these hands, a woman and her husband were staying in a caravan because it's an area that's very popular for holidays. You have the whole of the moors to travel on, and some wonderful walks there across the lovely rivers and up the tors. And she was in the caravan, her husband was asleep, and she saw these two hands climbing up the open window, which was next to the place where the man she loved was asleep. She said she'd never been so terrified in her life. She said a prayer. She asked for the help of God and the saints and the angels, and the hands fell off the glass. She hurried across and closed the window. Now, that, I think, was one of the most sinister and threatening things I've ever heard of. And,
the hairy hand.
The hairy hands of Dartmoor. I'd put that up at number one.
I love that. Still riding your motorcycle?
I haven't got one at the moment. I had my big Harley for many years and thoroughly loved it. And if we've got time, I'll just do one quick story about that. I was making a TV series called Castles of Horror, which was on the Discovery Channel a few years ago. And my director, producer, had taken us over to Portugal to a place called Capo de Espaciel, where there was a ruin in the middle of a big gravel patch at the top of a mountain. And the director, because you and I know what TV directors can be like. They want to get good, sensational pictures for the viewers. And he said, Lionel, can you ride that bike round there fast? Well, he was not a biker, and he got the idea that irrespective of the size of the bike, you can still do 70 round a tight corner. And I didn't try and explain to him. I can do this. So I was riding this big Harley around the gravel around the ruin as though it was a track bike going around a race course. And he was saying, can you go any faster? I said, yeah, fine. And I was doing 70 plus, and I kept passing on this very tight circuit, kept passing a big notice board in red, and I can't read one word of Portuguese, but it was obviously a warning of some kind. So when I'd finished, to my director's satisfaction, kicked up enough gravel and got the shots he wanted, I put the bike down, walked across, and in very small English letters underneath, it translated the Portuguese warning, and it said, extreme hazard, unfenced cliff edge. I'd been within 5 yards of this at 70 plus, slithering on gravel. So I walked around behind the notice board to see what this unfenced cliff edge was like, and it was a 100-foot drop straight down to the rocks and the sea beneath. So I called across to my director, hey, Clive, come and have a look at this. So he came over, peeped over the edge with me, and said, you know, we could have lost a very valuable motorcycle.
What about the valuable guy who was on it?
Right? Yeah. Yeah, the implication being that as far as directors were concerned, presenters were replaceable, but a Harley-Davidson wasn't. So that was that was my favorite biker story. I think that was the nearest I came to reaching the great beyond.
I love it. So what is new with you and Patricia? What have you been up to?
Well, we're absolutely fine. We were married in 1957, and so, of course, in this year of 2014, it's 57 years since 1957, so it will be a kind of 57th anniversary squared. We looked at it that way, and we're looking forward to that very much. That's in September. In the meantime, we have been very busy writing. We've got a new story coming out in a collection called Vatican Vaults, and each of these stories sets out to suggest that a sealed package has been found deep in the hidden vaults of the Vatican, and that each of these sealed packets of documents reveals some mighty secret, which, if it had been known and not stored away carefully in that sacred hiding place, would have altered world history. And so we're very, very proud and pleased to be selected to write a story for them. That's coming out very soon. And the other thing that we've just finished doing is in Spanish. Again, I don't speak a word of Spanish, but the publisher is translating it. I wrote it in English. And it's a series of episodes. It's one long novel, but it's a series of episodes in which there's an evil galactic empire, and there's a hero, a freedom fighter, leader of the freedom fighter.
Sounds nonfiction.
yeah, it does. It does. He's an Earthman, and he's got a hyperspace ship. And on Earth, in a labyrinth deep below the Sahara Desert, they have discovered a time portal. They learn how to control it, so they've got a doorway to the past. And depending upon the kind of hero or heroine whom they need, our hero goes through the time portal, and he has to retrieve the hero in the moment of that hero's death. Because, as you and I well know, with our interest in time travel and our studies of the subject, if you took somebody, should we say, when he was 20, and he would normally have lived to be 90, then the other 70 years of his life and all the things that he did would be missing, so that history would be changed. And the guys who had pulled him out probably wouldn't be there, or their world would be totally different. So you have to rescue, on each of these episodes, you rescue the hero at the point of his death. And you then, your medical team, rejuvenate him on board your ship, and you take him to the planet where his special talents are needed.
How cool.
And so, of course, we took all kinds of guys, all kinds of heroes, and we moved them across. And one quick example, on one of these planets that were being attacked by the troopers of the evil galactic empire, they were buying slave girls. They were capturing girls and selling them as slaves. And they reckoned, or the hero reckoned, that the best way to overcome that would be to get a very powerful warrior heroine to lead the slave girls in revolt and to overcome them that way. So he dives back into ancient Britain and comes back with Queen Boadicea, sometimes called Boudica, you know, the one who led the revolt against the Romans. And Boudica is delighted to come and help these girls. And you can imagine the next time the slavers go in thinking they've got a lot of timid and terrified kids in there who'll just come along meekly, they are met by the most powerful Amazon warrior of all time, and she makes mincemeat of the slavers.
You know what? I could sit back and listen to you for hours just giving us campfire stories. I mean, just fantastic.
I am always so honored when you say that. I don't feel I deserve such praise from such an experienced and wise colleague, but it makes me feel good.
Do you know, it'll be a snap like that where I'll be talking to you on this program saying, Lionel, next week we're going to be running your 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. That's how fast this year seems to be going by for me.
It is. You're absolutely right, and I do love that poem. And I'm so honored and delighted to be on your show and that you like my Night Before Christmas so much.
Something's happening. It's almost as if we're time traveling, or time is, you know, we're missing gaps of time because, I mean, I just can't believe we're in June already.
No,
clicking along. Wow.
Yeah, I can't. It's just, you know, it is just amazing. And you know that I always think that when I read through Shakespeare, because when I was head of the big English department in a big school, I was constantly teaching Shakespeare to the kids for our O-levels and A-level exams. And I still think of him as not only a superb writer, but he was a pre-scientific sociologist, a psychologist. He had so many gifts. He had such a deep understanding of human behavior. And he said exactly what you just said about time. It just seems to race past. And he does that wonderful piece, you know, with whom doth time stand still?
Well, my friend, you be well. We're out of time. Thank you for the birthday wishes, and we'll talk to you soon. Lionel Fanthorpe, for Dan Galante, Tricia Pepe, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Timothy Benall, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burles, George Knapp, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.